It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwin. In the year 1956, one out of five homes in America did not yet have a refrigerator. Dear Abby's newspaper advice column made its debut. The soap opera As the World Turns had its premiere. And the king of rock and roll went gold with a string of hits. You know I can't be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please tell the phone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. 1956 was also the year the U.S. exploded the first airborne hydrogen bomb. Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev declared, "History is on our side. We will bury you." And on June 29th of 1956, U.S. President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed the National Defense Interstate Highway Act, fulfilling a pledge he had made in a State of the Union address.
A modern highway system is essential to meet the needs of our growing population, our expanding economy, and our national security. We are accelerating our highway improvement program under existing state and federal laws and authorizations. But this effort will not, in itself, assure our people of an adequate system.
When he signed the legislation creating the interstate highway system 50 years ago, President Eisenhower set in motion the largest public works project in history. There are 55,000 bridges and 100 tunnels. 42 billion cubic yards of earth were moved to make way for 46,508 miles of interstate roads. And while they comprise less than 1% of the nation's roads, the interstates account for about a quarter of the miles we travel each year.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all.
The uniform superhighways, built to strict federal standards, redefined our sense of self and mobility and the relationship between the city and countryside, and paved the way to suburbia.
To see the USA and see it in your Chevrolet.
The interstates crisscross America. I-90 is the longest route. It stretches 3,020 miles from Seattle, Washington to Boston, which is not far from Dan McNichol's home in Alston, Massachusetts. Dan McNichol is author of The Roads That Built America, the incredible story of the U.S. interstate system. And to commemorate the 50th anniversary milestone, he took us on a tour of the road in real style.
The car is a 1951 Hudson, and it's one of the first cars built for high-speed travel on superhighways, and that's why I bought it. It's low, sleek. I mean, kids come, I walk out of a McDonald's, and kids come up to me and say, "Is that chopped? Is that a hot rod?" But this thing gets about 20 miles to the gallon, so it's doing a little better than most SUVs.
All right, well, let's get in there.
Let's burn some fuel.
Okay, let's see here. 1950. Oh, hey, this is a big front seat.
Welcome to my living room. You ready?
Let's go.
All right.
Yeah, I see a radio. It's got just AM on it, and does it work?
It does. And here, I'll turn it on and see if we get some reception. It adds to the ambiance. You feel like you're in 1950. If you heard the Red Sox, you would expect them to be playing the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Let's see if we can find them.
Just a lonely beating of my heart.
Americans came back from World War II. They had money. They wanted to drive fast. They wanted to buy cars. But there were no interstates, no superhighways, except for the Pennsylvania Turnpike. So the states took it on themselves to start building roads. In 1956, there was only 1,500 miles of superhighways here and there around the country. Eisenhower said, "This is never going to work. We're never going to have a national system unless we do it from the top down, like Caesar had done, like Napoleon had done, like Hitler had done." So we launched this project. The whole point, though, is the turnpikes, like the Mass Turnpike we're driving on right now, were grandfathered into the system in 1956. So instantly, when he signed legislation, about 2,100 miles of turnpikes around the country became interstate highways. And the idea was to buy these states out, you know, to pay them off for the roads that they had built and that they were contributing to the interstate system with. That never happened. Congress never acted on that. So the turnpikes, a lot of them, like the Mass Pike, were grandfathered and allowed to keep collecting tolls, even though the rest of the interstate systems, federally funded, were free highways.
Okay, so now we got a, well, it looks like we're hitting the tolls.
Thanks.
Yeah, can I get a receipt?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for videoing me. Where's the video?
This is radio.
Yeah, we want some video. I look like Simon Cowell, don't I?
See ya.
See ya.
See ya later, alligator. Well, after a while, crocodile. See ya later, alligator. Farewell. So long. Goodbye.
One thing I noticed about the interstate is there are an awful lot of trucks.
Yeah, you know, the interstate system, I think people got this romantic notion, was about getting in your station wagon, taking the family across country and going on vacation. But it's really always been about commerce, and more so about trucking specifically. The interstate system is about getting inventory to where it needs to go. Take CVS, for example, a drugstore. They have 41 million miles logged on their trucks on the highways every year, and most of that is on the interstate system. They do 6,100 deliveries, 6,100 different stores, but yet they have a 98.5% accuracy on deliveries. It's because of the interstate system. The interstate is the engine of growth. Without the interstate system, there would be no internet. There would be no Googling and Amazoning and sending books and sending materials across America by clicking if you didn't have the interstate system to provide the brick and the mortar deliveries.
What's the interstate system done to the environment?
The interstate system has probably done more to shift the environment, to damage the environment. When you think about going through 46,000 miles of highway, some of them 12 lanes, 16 lanes wide in their extremes, it's pretty horrendous when you think about the tax it imposes on the earth. The only upside to that is that it allows people to explore areas and hopefully appreciate areas, therefore the environment, therefore preservation and conservation. And by opening up the parks and by opening up the West and by opening up areas of the country people had never been to before, we hope that's the case.
How safe is it?
The interstate system is by far the safest highway anywhere in the world. By a factor of two in this country, it is the safest route. If your family's going across town, if they're going across the country, you're twice as likely to survive if you take the interstate system. And that's because everything on it is designed for safety. Everything on the interstate system is designed to keep you alive. The divided highways, the long acceleration and deceleration ramps coming and going off the highway, the wider lanes, you know, those 12 feet travel lanes, 10 feet on the right for a breakdown, and then 3 feet on the left to manage a breakdown and repair. On the side of the road, you'll notice there are these divots, and they're called Charlie bars. When the car straddles the white line on the right side of the road, it's meant to wake the driver up because they're assumingly falling asleep, and the idea is to stir them awake before they careen off to the side of the road. And the inventor, supposedly, the inventor's son was killed as he was driving home alone, fell asleep behind the wheel one night. His name was Charlie, and as a tribute to him, the inventor coined them Charlie bars.
Ladies and gentlemen, James Dean. We probably have a great many young people watching our show tonight, and for their benefit, I'd like your opinion about fast driving on the highway. Do you think it's a good idea?
A good point. I used to fly around quite a bit, you know. I took a lot of unnecessary chances on the highways. And I started racing, and now I drive on the highways, I'm extra cautious. Because no one knows what they're doing half the time. You don't know what this guy's going to do with that one. On a track, there are a lot of men who spend a lot of time developing rules and ways of safety. And I find myself being very cautious on the highway. I don't have the urge to speed on the highway.
I'm a road runner, honey.
Today, a half a century after construction began, the interstate has transformed our landscape, our lives, and our waistlines. Chowing down and gassing up have become a daily part of life along America's superhighways. The year before construction began on the interstates, McDonald's began selling its first of its billions of burgers. But you have to get off the interstate to buy them. By federal law, eateries and stores are banned from almost all parts of the superhighway system, except for toll roads and some older roads that were grandfathered into the system. The idea was to keep the road commercial-free. So if you're willing to settle for just a vending machine, a stretch, and a washroom, there are more than 1,200 rest areas serving interstate motorists.
Is that a Hudson Hornet?
It's a Hudson Pacemaker, the economy version of the Hornet.
I remember when the Hornet came out.
Your name, sir, and where are you from?
Cal Holt. I was born and raised in Oklahoma, lived in California, and been out here since Navy brought me out here in 1952, I guess.
So do you remember what it was like before the interstate highways?
Oh, absolutely. Matter of fact, I had a 1944, and I drove from Oklahoma, old 66, all the way to L.A.,
And what was that like compared to the interstate now?
Well, I'll tell you what, we went over some mountains when you got out there in Arizona and up through there in the old 66. And it used to be cliffs with about 2 feet of dirt shoulder, no rails. And you get up there, and boy, it was just nothing. You could see cars coming up behind you, right, with a windy road going up.
If you grab the door handle more tightly, you won't fall over.
Oh, I'll tell you, it's my mother passed out going over them.
But now looking back, you know, this is the 50th anniversary of the interstate system. What do you think it's done for America?
Oh, it's one of the greatest things Eisenhower ever came up with, or any president. The interstates? Absolutely.
Why?
Absolutely. Because you can drive at high speed. You can get from here to there. In the old days on these roads, it was just two lanes. 66 was two lanes. One going one way and one going the other way. No passing zones. Some roads even had, they call it a suicide lane.
Suicide lane?
Yes. It was like three lanes. But the middle lane is cars coming from both directions could pass. You know, and then they had the stripe like you could pull out and pass, and that's called a suicide lane. Those could be cars coming from both directions.
Now, what's the worst thing about the interstates?
Oh, I don't find anything wrong with them except... Interstate 90 leaves Logan Airport now. You can get on Interstate 90 and drive to Seattle. But it's got one stoplight. And that's in Wallace, Idaho.
Now, why do they have a stoplight in Wallace, Idaho?
Because when they put the interstate in, I guess they wouldn't give them right away unless they could have a stop sign so people could get off into Wallace. It's a little small town. And that was their only income, I guess, was tourists.
All right, Cal, well, thank you so much.
All right.
At this spot, we found trucker Jack Wetherill leaning out of the cab of his 18-wheeler, snapping digital pictures of our set of wheels.
Hi there. Hey, saw you taking a picture of the car.
Yeah.
You used to have one?
No, but my dad used to have one when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah? Tell me about it.
Well, it wasn't that color. It was black. But it was a nice car, but that's a long time ago. I'm 62 years old. I can't remember them far back.
Now, this car is just about as old as the interstate system. In fact, that's why we're out here today. It's the 50th anniversary of the interstate. You remember what life was like before the interstates?
Yeah, I used to drive before the interstate. It was rough. It was rough. But I think it was a whole lot easier than it is today, too.
Why is that?
No traffic.
Ah.
This is a 19... 98 Kenworth T2000.
Yeah, how much can it haul?
I can get as much as 34,000 in the trailer and household.
Yeah? And how far are you from home right now?
Washington State, Tacoma.
So you got a long ways to go.
I got to deliver one more car tomorrow. Are you from around here? You know who Tom Ashford is? Of the Patriots? I'm loading him next week, taking him out to the Seahawks.
So you're going to drive I-90 all the way from Boston to Seattle?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah?
That's my normal run.
Now, I hear there's a rumor that when you get to this little town in Idaho, there's a stoplight. Is that true?
It's gone. It's been gone for 11 years now. Wallace, Idaho. Yeah, last stoplight on I-90. That went out 11 years ago. Freeway was completed.
Yeah. Well, have a great ride on I-90 back to Tacoma, Jack.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
So, Dan, one of the things about the interstate, even though we're riding around in our own little separate castles, it somehow seems to bring people together, like at the truck stop.
You know, the interstate system probably physically does more to bind the country together than any other structure, any other thing out there. It brings you to your family, it brings you to your place of work, it brings your toothbrush and your toothpaste to your front door. And it's that, I think, that people often forget. And it's fun to celebrate that, because when you sit down and you think about it, you think, what would life be like without this interstate system?
Dan McNichol is author of The Roads That Built America, the incredible story of the U.S. interstate system. To commemorate the 50th anniversary of the interstate, Dan drove his 51 Hudson across the country. And you can see pictures of Dan and his classic car on our website, loe.org. And we should note that technically the interstate will never be completed, but the last segment that was built was the Big Dig in Boston. Now, that 8-mile system of tunnels under the city cost $14 billion, and that's nearly twice what it cost to construct I-95 all the way from Houlton, Maine to Miami, Florida.